A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. I'm joined here by Matt Trumpets.
Hey there, buddy. How is it going?
Yeah, and fantastic, Matt. There's no Chinese translator this week.
No, it was funny enough last week. I thought we'd had enough of it.
But how will the people in Shanghai know what we're saying now?
Ni hao, xie xie.
It's good of you to be so multilingual and considerate of our Asian listeners. So,
yes,
you know what, Matt? It's been an interesting week in the Formula One media. A lot of people have been saying, like, mean stuff. Why are people mean, Matt?
Because they have no real life or friends to call their own, so they live on Twitter in 140 characters at a time. I don't know. I've always wondered this. It's always been one of the things that bothered me most about our sport, is the fact that if I like driver A, it's not enough that you like driver B, but you have to attack driver A to feel better about yourself.
It's amazing, isn't it? And it's across every, forums on websites, it's on the comment sections of like Sky Sports F1. It's pretty ubiquitous across the whole of the internet.
It truly is. And unfortunate too, but I think that's just sometimes life.
And we even got a bit of a dig in the comments section of a certain media outlet. And I just like to say, there's no need to have a go at us on various platforms, or me in particular, because you can call in. If you add Spanners Ready on Skype, you can just call in. If you disagree with me, let me know. I'm a big boy. I can take it.
Absolutely. Yeah, call in. Have a chat.
So, for those of you just finding us, we are an independent podcast, but we are delighted to be on Downforce Radio, the nation's motorsport station, for as long as they'll have us. And that's where we also host E-Radio Show, where we talk a lot about a working method to actually watch the race, Matt.
Yes, we do talk about the best way to watch the race.
I'm not going to get you.
Which is not always the legal way to watch the race, but
I am looking forward to hearing you on E-Radio later in the week if you manage to get it on about your trials of trying to actually watch the broadcast.
It was so irritating. So irritating to try and do that. But to be fair, my whole setup has changed, so.
You're going to take some of the blame.
Not really.
Okay. Well, we are aiming to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We are going to keep this show safe for work, although the live stream may not be. But we are keeping it clean here on the podcast, so you can play this with kids in the background or at work. If you like, my son is 6 and I want him to be able to hear it. So that's the level I'm aiming at. Not for understanding, just for manners and politeness. So that's some of the housekeeping out of the way, Matt. Should we just you and me do this?
Nah, you know, I think it'd be better if we had a few friends on, as it were.
Okay, our second token American, it's Ken Vortex Mortio. Thanks for joining us again, Ken.
Hey, guys.
And the glamorous Vivian Beauvais from Honduras.
Hi, Spanners, Matt, Vortex, Tony. Hi, hello, everybody.
Hey. Awesome. And we also have helping us monitor the chat room from the live stream that you'll find at spannersready.com/livestream. We have producer Tony.
Hi there, coming at you live from the kids' toy room. I've been booted out of their usual space.
I thought you didn't sound as billowy, a bit of an echo in the kids' toy room.
Yeah, sorry about that. I really can't say to the wife, hey, I need the front room today. That just doesn't fly.
It doesn't wash. Is that Tinkerbell in the background?
Yes, it is. And this is a basketball. And yeah, that totally went in.
Score.
Big Dirty News.
Lots of big dirty news to get through this week, but we're going to start off with women in motorsport. Now, Vivian, I would like you to set the scene for us of why people are particularly talking about women in motorsport. But bear in mind, if you perform even slightly suboptimally, you will be replaced by a middle-class Caucasian male.
Well, apparently...
You left out mediocre.
Oh, a mediocre pay Caucasian male.
Okay, so there's been a big buzz this week over what Bernie Ecclestone said about women in Formula One. But first of all, let me set you the scene. It was at the advertising conference, week European conference, and he was sitting on the most uncomfortable sofa, the smallest sofa ever, with Martin Sorrell. So he was asking questions, and they were going on for 2 hours for part one, then part two, and then for part two they were 45 minutes in, more or less, and they had questions from the panel. Somebody asked about Formula One and women, and obviously the media only quoted the part where Bernie Ecclestone said that he doesn't know if they're capable physically of being fast enough in a race car. So, but then Martin made a face and said, "Bernie, let's think about it." Yeah, and says, "I think they should get a chance. If there's an F1 team who wants to have female drivers, and they can put $100 billion, then I will put $20 billion and have women competing in Formula One." So the last part, he didn't get quoted on it.
Yeah, but and it's a bit. It was a bit of a. I mean, was that genuine, that last bit, or was that kind of a bit of a hand washing? Hey, look, if someone wants to put billions of dollars, then, you know, maybe it's a comment where he knows he won't be called on it.
Yeah, no, in the first bit, when he finished saying about women in Formula One not being fast enough in a car, he said, "That's my opinion. I may be wrong." He even said, "I might be wrong. I did watch the video, and you can watch it if you want. It's 43 minutes in, the second part." And when he says it, but obviously he just got quoted on the part that would create a buzz and sell newspapers and have people comment on social media. I think he was treated unfairly because not everything was said about him.
Well, what do we think, guys? Treated unfairly? He's got previous with this kind of comment, has he not? Go on.
He said things about Hitler, about Putin, and Matt, you're going to laugh at this. He even mentioned in that video that if Trump did win the election in the United States, Vladimir Putin was going to tell him what to do and say. So that didn't get quoted on the media.
Oh, my God. Do not get me started on American politics right now. We've lost our collective mind. But Bernie has always loved a dictator, though. Let's face it. He does not believe in democracy in any way, shape, or form. And he's always been very clear about this, at least as regards business and politics. But he's also doing his job. He's making it's there is no such thing as bad publicity, I guess, in his mind. And Formula One needs all the publicity it can possibly get. And so whenever he says something controversial, that's a week's worth of coverage for Formula One. And especially in an off week, are you really surprised to hear him say such ostensibly stupid things?
No, not
for the media to pick on and write headlines about?
No, but there's two things that have sort of washed out of that. The first one is you've then had basically every misogynist in motorsport crawl out of the woodwork. You know, to say, Mario Andretti stands out particularly as kind of saying, well, if women think they're good enough, if these women think they're good enough, you know, let them prove it, you know? And I don't know, that just hurt me a bit because it implies that women have an even playing field in the first place.
My opinions on women in motorsports is that I would love to see more women in motorsports. And I think it's critical that that growth happens at the grassroots level. That's where we find the talent that we find today. And in general, I think part of the problem, and it comes from the top, not just Bernie, but he could do a better job with this, but also Jean Todt at the FIA, which is that motorsports should be less expensive and it should be a little more ubiquitous. And if you want to see growth in other countries, there should be more done to create inexpensive motorsports with cheap cars, inexpensive carts, that type of thing. So if some young girl sees Formula One on TV and is intrigued with that, she could say, oh, you know what, maybe me and my brother, dad, you could take us over to the kart track and we could have a go, right? And then boom, all of a sudden you would find the super talented gal that is out there and she could have that career.
Don't forget that the FIA has already created a Women in Motorsports Commission since December 2009. So it's been what, 7 years since then? And they include, for example, Michelle Morton, Susie Wolf, Catherine Legge, Monisha Kalterborn. But it also, Susie Wolf has this foundation, Dare to Be Different, where she's trying to get girls to get into karting because that's where the things start, at the funnel, at the end of the funnel. So if you have more girls involved in lower categories, then it's possible that they can start in GP2, GP1, and then go to Formula One. But if we don't have the seeds, it's going to be very difficult for a grown lady to just get into Formula One. That's not going to happen overnight.
Yeah, well, you two are both kind of, you know, making this point about grassroots. I agree that grassroots need more women in. But I can't agree with that. That's the starting place. It's not the responsibility of grassroots. They haven't got the legwork. They haven't got the publicity. They don't have the oomph to go out there and start grabbing girls and getting them into karting. For my mind, they haven't had the wealth of role models. I'm going to make the case. I'm going to say a dirty word that tends to get people in Britain a little bit excited, which is positive discrimination. Now, I know it gets the likes of John Gaunt and UKIP up in arms. I don't really understand why it upsets them. So to my mind, it's an anomaly that there are not women in motorsport. I personally don't see any reason why there shouldn't be women in motorsport. We can get to the physicality of it later, Matt.
No, I want to make the point that it's odd to me there are not more women in motorsport, because physically speaking, women tend to be more diminutive. Weight is very important in all forms of open wheel motorsport. It would give the teams more ballast to play with. It would be, all things being equal, an advantage on average to be a woman in motorsport versus being a man.
Yeah, I would have thought so. And so for me, it's an anomaly, and it's an anomaly that needs fixing. And you can use positive discrimination to that end. And I'll take a risk. I'll use the example of black police officers. In the UK, there used to be no black police officers. Now, if you want to tell me that that's because black people are less able to be police officers, that's a very quick way to fall out with me. It was cultural. Black kids were seeing white faces in uniform and thinking, well, police are white people. They're the people I run away from. They're the people that give me a hard time. Perhaps. But my little girl watches the Grand Prix with me, and she sees everyone get out their cars at the end, take their helmets off, and they're all boys. So racing drivers are boys. That's all she sees. What people miss when they get upset about positive discrimination is it's supposed to be a temporary measure. That's the key word. You accept people from a smaller pool, even if sometimes that involves accepting a lower standard. And it's only a lower standard because you're picking from a much smaller group of people. Go on, Matt.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the standards. Let's talk about who the standards were really designed to test. The standards were designed to test the people who were already there.
Yeah.
So in the case that you brought up about the police officers, here in the States, both for firefighters and police officers, there have been no small number of controversies. Did I pronounce that properly?
No.
Damn it.
Controversies.
Right. Anyway, there've been no small amount of controversies based on the entrance exams to become a firefighter, become a police officer, because they culturally discriminate against people of color in general, and they also discriminate against women in general.
Right.
So you have these cultural institutions that have developed that are actually discriminatory in nature and keep qualified candidates from other cultures and backgrounds from getting the job.
And I don't think you're saying that someone is deliberately setting them to be like that. It's just that they are designed amongst what is the status quo. And that
They have evolved. Yeah. They have evolved over time from a society that was discriminatory. And as a result, they still project that influence into the here and now, where we are trying to become a more egalitarian or meritocratic society.
Before we get anywhere else, Tony, anything going on in the chat?
Yeah, Senior Trowell says that he's got a 3- and a 1-year-old daughter, and he fully expects one of them to be the first female F1 world champion. And he said to bring on positive discrimination if it means I can afford for them to be a champion.
Unlucky, Ivy's 2 years ahead of you, and she will win in her first 2 seasons. So
as long as we get tickets to the paddock when she's going to win, that's the only deal.
Anything else in the tea?
Also, something about your forehead and hairline and bad hair.
This is great. This is the best my hair's been for years.
Doesn't Spanner's hair look bad today? Yes, plus forehead is shiny, totally shiny, .. and large forehead. Senior Troll says forehead, it's getting on for a 5 or 6 head. Someone said I might offer, it's bigger than when we started a dad's view a year and a half ago. Can't stop time marching on, eh?
Wow.
That's all we have for now. Back to you.
I'm going to cry for a little while, and then we go on. Right, apart from the forehead comment, I tried a new camera angle, but you can check it out yourself on the live stream at spannersready.com/livestream. We tend to go on Sundays. But he's making that point about his daughters, and it's exactly what is motivating me on this. This is why I feel passionate. I won't accept a world where my little girl is told, no, motor racing isn't for you, and neither should you. So yeah, I just think society needs to earn this correct balance. And if we just do nothing about it, we're just very guilty. We're being as unfair as it might be to some people who get bypassed temporarily through positive discrimination. It's a travesty if we continue going on decade after decade, not giving women role models to aim for. All the little boys got great role models, but there's no women there for men there's no women there for little girls to look at on the level of Vettel, Hamilton, Harianto. When people complain about people like Carmen Jorda and Susie Wolf, firstly, the Susie Wolf thing irritates me because no one complains that Nico Rosberg is there because of family or Max or anyone else. Susie's there because of family. Perhaps that did help. But my little girl doesn't know any of that. I can point at Susie Wolf to Ivy and say, there is a woman that has test piloted the best prototype single-seater cars.
They're going to complain about Susie Wolf and family? Who's Nico Rosberg's father?
Exactly.
Who's Michael Schumacher? I mean, and come on.
Yeah.
Let's face it. Racing is so expensive and connection to sponsors so tenuous that in a way it's become almost a patriarchal, matriarchal kind of sport. If you look at Verstappen, who's his dad?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, really? A Formula One driver too? Come on.
Oh, yeah, okay. I really wanted to squeeze this thing in about Carmen Jorda, which is that my daughter has seen Carmen Jorda on the TV, and as much as I personally, I just want more Carmen Jorda. But my daughter doesn't care how far behind on a simulator some Danish kid says that Carmen Jorda is. She just sees this stunning, beautiful blonde woman in a racing suit and says, look at that cool lady in a racing suit. I can do that too.
Yep. But here, I want to tie together what you're saying with what Ken was saying earlier about one of the big hurdles that all drivers have to face, especially if they want to go Formula One, but really to any top series, is they have to bring sponsorship with them. And this is a skill that has nothing to do with how fast you can drive a car. And we are losing out on some really talented drivers. And I know you were beating the drums for Bradley Philpott earlier as being a particular example of someone who's really fast and never got a shot. But I want to point to the current Indy series, the ladder to IndyCar, where you can start by winning at a motor racing school, get into the lowest rung, and if you win that rung, you automatically get sponsors for the next rung, all the way up to getting a drive in IndyCar proper. Formula One doesn't really have something that organized to bring drivers and sponsors together. And if we look at the problem of women not having a fair shot, I think they're going to have an even harder time at sponsorship than the boys are. because boys traditionally get sponsorship. So if you're making that choice, you're going to have a lot more in the line if you pick a girl over a boy, because if you could pick a mediocre boy, and there's tons of those in the sport, no one's going to look at you sideways. But if you pick a mediocre girl, you are going to feel it at your job in a way that you just may not wish to accept. And this is another example of how culturally, the deck can be stacked against women, even if it's not intentional discrimination on anybody's part.
Yeah.
But the way to answer that is to take that 20 million pounds, start with carts, make it free. Just send out the flyer. Are you a girl? Want to race a cart? Come see us.
They won't turn up. They won't turn up unless they're seeing glamorous women in race suits. That's my opinion on that. But I want to go to Viv. Viv, who would win in a fight between you and Matt Trumpets? My point being, are women physically able to do this?
Yeah, men always have the last word. Yes, dear. So.
Yes.
Guys, don't tell me it's not true. All of you answer to your women and you say, yes, dear. That's the last word men have. Okay.
Yes, dear.
If you want a quiet life, you've got to.
Yeah.
Exactly. So regarding sponsorship, I think there would be a bigger array of sponsors if there were more women in sports. It doesn't matter what age, it doesn't matter what category. At the end of the day, who's the one who does the more shopping? Who's the one who buys? Who's the one who sees the sponsorships? It's women.
Yeah.
Don't tell me that men only buy tech things and cars, and that's all.
I'm not allowed to go supermarket shopping anymore.
Women are in charge of everything else. Yeah. And if they start seeing brands that they normally would buy or they don't buy because they don't know about them,
then
it's going to be a bigger array. Now, we have world champions who haven't scored a single point in Formula One. It doesn't matter if a woman scores a point or not.
I agree. And women on the pit wall, Viv?
Well, on the pit wall, we have women. For example, we have Manisha managing a team. We have Claire Williams managing a team. And then we have somebody in the Haas Formula team, Ruth Bascom, who's really doing the race strategy.
Yeah.
And I think she's done a very good job so far.
You think she's done a good job so far, but she's a little bit camera shy, isn't she?
Yeah, because we don't want to be the center of attention. We let you guys do that.
Yeah, I suppose there would be a lot of tokenism as well, wouldn't there? I mean, people would want to hold her up as the woman that is the strategist, you know, rather than Haas's strategist.
Okay, let's be fair there. I mean, strategists in F1 are always off camera. I mean, how many times have we seen the strategist for Mercedes, for Red Bull? And I love Ruth Buscom, because just looking, for instance, at the Russian GP, the choices that she made on tires months ago when she had to choose them was super aggressive. I was super impressed with that girl in general and what she's done for Haas so far.
Cool. Anyone else? Anything else to say about women in motorsport?
I've got something from the chat room.
Go.
Just talking about when we were all, when Matt wanted to make sure that we got tickets for Senior Trowell's daughter.
Yes.
He said, never mind tickets to the paddock. He's at WEC last weekend. Straight after quali, he was standing less than a metre from the front, and the Audi and the Porsches in Parc Fermé. Paddock was open to walk through. Me and Dotto walked past Jackie Stewart, Mark Webber, Nick Heidfeld. Could have stopped and spoke to them all. F1 is much too closed.
And yes, I was there at Silverstone last year for the WEC, and it was a great racing experience, but you know, much in the same way as if me and Tony had a drag race, we would have no problem with you coming and chatting to us either. If there's a billion people who wanted to watch it, you know, it's a bit more expensive. Do you want to have a drag race?
Me?
Yeah,
let's do it. Which card should we use? Should we use the rubbish ones that we have to have, or the decent ones that the wives get to drive around in?
She's not going to let me drive that. We'll have to use the rubbish ones. Matt?
Yes.
Yeah, I want to make one more small, teeny tiny point, if I may.
Okay.
Sorry, don't roll your eyes at me, Ken. It's a very short point, but it's a very important one. What is one of the major problems in terms of Formula One revenue right now? What have we been losing massively?
TV?
Ratings. TV ratings.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but don't women make up roughly around half of the total viewing population of any given country?
In general.
And if we had women in and around the sport, wouldn't that give them more reason to watch the races?
That's a good point.
Therefore, wouldn't it bring in more money to Formula One and solve a problem that it has? I mean, it's just well, I'll use the S word. It's stupid. It's stupid that they've not done this yet.
Brilliant.
If more women want to watch the race, then there'll be more men allowed to buy the subscription.
Oh my God.
Because their
God.
Wives have allowed it.
That's the most amazing point in the world.
I'm thinking like a 20% hike at least in men and, you know, and then there'll be even more. Yeah. I know, I'm a genius.
I'm just saying.
Oh, well, please appeal to grumpy women. I mean, women, so that my wife will let me watch the girl. We can all sit as a family instead of it being, I've let myself down with that last comment. But is that the end of women in motorsport, guys?
No, it's the beginning.
It's the beginning. You definitely haven't.
Oh, no, you missed the apex.
Matt, why are the manufacturers and Bernie fighting each other?
Well, we've talked about it in previous podcasts, that the rules battle that's been ongoing has been almost as much about the manufacturers versus Bernie, with the EU getting involved, as anything else. And we've seen once again reports turning up on various online publications that the revolution is being led by, not surprisingly, an Italian who is also Canadian, which does make it sort of surprising that a revolution is being led by him. But nevertheless, it turns out that it may be Ferrari leading the way to try and depose Ecclestone. This is what I have read online this week. And if so, it could be quite the entertaining battle, because Ferrari has long felt that it was Formula One. But I think what a lot of people overlook when they calculate the odds of this is that if Mercedes, the likes of Mercedes and Fiat Chrysler, are arrayed economically against CVC and Bernie Ecclestone, I don't think CVC or Bernie Ecclestone stand a chance against massive multinational corporations at the end of the day. But I am concerned about what happens if they succeed wholeheartedly in taking over the sport for themselves, because it's not just about the manufacturers.
Okay, so...
Oh, wait a minute. I love the sound Ken just made there. I wish you could see it. This is worth the live stream. He's like, his mouth is all like uncomfortable. He's like, I can't wait to hear this.
So how could that happen, given that Bernie reports to the owners of the sport, the CVC, and I don't really see... I mean, like, what kind of influence could Chrysler, Fiat, and Mercedes... and Renault-Nissan have with the CVC?
Well, I'm not sure. I haven't gamed this out that far. My essential point being that if we're going to talk about resources to do things, if you take the combined resources of Renault-Mercedes, which is Renault-Nissan, of course, Mercedes and Fiat Chrysler, they could afford to really do whatever the hell they wanted to, regardless of whatever economic sanctions Bernie wants to throw at them. They could afford to create Formula One from the ground up tomorrow. And it's almost happened once or twice before in the past couple of decades. You had FISA FOCA, then you had FOCA FODA, and now we're seeing yet again a third iteration of it, which really does suggest that there's just something basically wrong with the structure, the governing structure of the sport. But I also want to bring up an item that showed up later in our list, which is the potential buyers for Sauber. Who might they be, Ken?
This is unfortunate news. Could well be Fiat.
In the form of Alpha, which would mean that there were only one or two independent voices. Really, could you even say one, what with Force India buying Mercedes engines, literally what we formerly knew as the Garagistas, who were once upon a time led, ironically enough, by Bernie Ecclestone, totally shut out by the manufacturers in the upcoming political battle for the soul of Formula One.
Yeah, that's a cartel right there, I'd say. That's a term that I like to use, and I think it's appropriate, and I hope that the EU Competition Commission sees it that same way. I really think that that's one way that could save Formula One is to bust up the contracts that are in place until 2020 and start from scratch.
I'm going to go you one further. The only way it's going to happen is if they tear up the TV rights contract and start over again. I believe the TV rights contract is the keystone to the entire puzzle. But that's me. Opinions may vary.
No, you raise a great point with that, but... the real problem with the TV contracts is even if those are torn up, the guy that negotiated those to begin with and has the philosophy that, oh, we TV ratings don't matter. It's the money that we get from the TV deals. That's what's more important. That strangled the teams so that they cannot get sponsors because they don't have the ratings to get the sponsors. It's really strangled the goose that's laying the golden egg in a way. If Bernie is still leading it, really, I think the way to solve it is for whatever it's going to take for CBC to sell it to somebody else. There's other visions and business plans for running this sport than what we have.
Well, I want to jump on that, and let's put blame where it's due. At the end of the day, when they sold the rights, the commercial rights, the FIA reneged on its responsibility to run the sport. If the FIA leased the rights, demanded that X percentage of the profits be set aside for the teams, set up a proper division schedule so that even the teams at the bottom could afford to compete in terms of a division of the prize money, well, then none of this would really be a problem. At the end of the day, they punted their responsibility when they sold the rights. And they did it, I believe, probably for commercial, for money, monetary reasons in terms of running their own business as much as anything else. And if they got the chance to do it over again, the FIA should retain the rights and only lease them to whoever says they can give them the best deal.
Yeah, right. If they could break that 99-year lease and make it a short-term, something like 5 years, seven years, so that way there's always the pressure that we need to review this or your lease is coming up in 3 years and I don't see you as being performing well. Right, exactly.
That's my point. Anyway, there you go, Spanners. We're done with the boring stuff now.
No, I mean, it's really interesting. I'm just listening to that completely on the outside. I have absolutely no idea about any of the commercial rights and everything like that. But, so basically, you're going to have two big uns in with one or two little fish. And some people might think that's bad.
A lot of people do.
To be honest, I thought it was already like that. I thought Sauber were already in Ferrari's pocket anyway.
No. The bottom half of the grid is fairly independent. And... So that's the real concern is I think Matt is exactly right. Is it going to become two or three entities own a majority of the grid? That's not a pleasant thought, really.
Okay, then. Guys, before we go on to the next subject, it's time for a word from our friends at Forge Motorsport. Can't find the parts you're looking for? Maybe it's time you called Forge Motorsport, famous for our innovation, clever design, and manufacturing to the highest quality. Our mantra is the best customer care and after service worldwide. So we've developed the largest range of replacement aftermarket blow-off valves, recirculation valves, intercoolers, and actuators in the world.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time.
For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
We are dedicated in applying our wealth of knowledge and technical expertise gained through years of research and development to create products that deliver the highest level of quality. Call 0152 380 999 and our dedicated staff are ready to help you. Forge Motorsport, proudly made in Great Britain. I've heard someone's just messaged me saying about the ads popping up in the Ustream. Nothing I can do about that. I cannot currently afford to have an ads-free broadcasting service. So just bear with it. I hope that it's worthwhile you joining in. You can, of course, go to patreon.com if you're the sort of person who does Patreon and search for Missed Apex on there and help support us. You can also sponsor a segment of any of the shows I do on the internet. For a fiver, we'll plug your blog and articles, or just tell people to follow you on Twitter, and maybe then we can have a glorious world of ad-free streaming. Tony, what are the chat room? What are they saying?
We've got a comment, anonymous 4921, catchy name. What about DeGrasse's comment about F1 drivers in Formula E? Ooh. And he said that they would struggle. Senior Travel jumps in with, you'd hope Formula E, Formula One, WC, Indy, professional racing drivers would, with a bit of testing, manage in each other's series.
Yeah, it was a bit of a weird comment, Ken, wasn't it, from DeGrasse? Like, where did that even come from?
Well, yeah, so I think that falls in the same vein as what Matt was talking about, the nature of Bernie's comment, in that DeGrasse's point was that I think Formula E is an unusual series. It's an unusual challenge for your average racing driver these days. And that was his point. And he used it to illustrate that, golly, even Lewis Hamilton, the top drivers in Formula One, would be challenged by this format, et cetera. Except it came out, of course, with the proper, what's the term, the headline, the reader-grabbing headlines.
Clickbait.
Lewis Hamilton would struggle in Formula E or whatnot, right? You know.
Yeah.
I don't think that really was what he meant. And I think in the context of his comments, he mentioned, he goes, you know, those guys are great drivers. And so he expects they would be able to perform. Point being, Formula E is an unusual series, challenging for drivers to step into.
Well, Matt, we saw Jeff come in, and didn't he take pole like straight away on his first session?
Jeff came in, but I was thinking of a certain other French Canadian who came in as a Formula One driver and did a rather, well, craptastic job, for lack of a better word.
He was 100 years old, though, Jacques Villeneuve.
JV.
Yeah.
Not Jeff. But yeah, and we have seen drivers come in and do very well, and we've seen drivers come in and struggle. But the style of driving, because the regeneration is so important, matters a lot. And the balance of the cars is probably quite a bit different to what you would have in your standard open wheel series. So you could see someone who is a very, very good driver come in and really not have great results. And frankly, I think if you put them in a next EV car, they would struggle no matter what this year.
Yeah, or the heavy back end of the Virgin car.
Yeah,
I think there's not much more to say about that. But if you call in on Skype, you can just use a little mobile device. Bit quiet this week, but you can just use the mobile app on your Skype and add Spanish Ready and weigh in on the conversation. And now, I've been looking forward to this for the last 4 or 5 days, because Ken has put he's staked his technical reputation on the line. He's taken Matt Summers F1, and I think he's said, rubbish, I can do a better job than you, Summers. You don't know what you're talking about. I, on Missed Apex podcast, I'm going to tell you all about Renault's homogeneous charge combustion ignition system. That's what you said, and you were really rude. You slammed it down to Summers and said, come on and I'll challenge you, is that what you said?
I don't really recall saying it that way. Thank you, my friend. But I found it very interesting. A journalist that I have a lot of respect for is Mark Hughes. He wrote an article, it was published Friday of the Chinese Grand Prix, and he forewarned that Renault is going to have a new motor for Canada, and he said it's going to be the homogeneous charge combustion ignition update, aka HCCI. There's some really cool things that are happening inside the internal combustion engine of Formula One cars today. Going into the side, the cylinder, inside the pistons, there's some bleeding edge technology happening there, and it's trying to get the maximum power out of each squirt of fuel, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so my point that I had made when I noticed that article is that what Mark Hughes, the journalist, had described, and he's a paddock guy, his connections are engineers, and he described a combustion process that involves an extension of the piston inside the cylinder that goes up and creates in a pocket within the cylinder head a higher combustion chamber where it compresses more and causes spontaneous combustion, so to speak. That's called combustion ignition. And then that pocket ignites the main cylinder of fuel.
Is that pretty clear to you, Spanners? Do you understand now? Okay, let me see. Okay, so you're talking about like a combination of the techniques for diesel and petrol. So with diesel, you squeeze the diesel as much as you can until the pressure makes it explode.
Spot on.
So if you just take a match to some diesel, it doesn't combust, you know, just in a cup. You couldn't just make it catch fire in the same way petrol can. Petrol, you squirt it into the head of the chamber, you spark it, and the explosion forces the cylinder down. So they're doing a combination of the two. Now, who has been doing this combination? So is the combination that they are first squeezing it and then sparking it? Is that the...
Well, yeah, so that's a great question. So here's what I've seen, right? The rumors are Mercedes has been doing this and that they're miles ahead. Then the rumors are that Ferrari, some say this happened last year at Monza, showed up with a motor that was improved, and it has a similar technology. And some were supposing that they use a chamber that the spark plug is in the small chamber and does a pre-ignition, and that fire then bursts out into the main chamber. And so it, again, is a two-stage thing. However, those are kind of rumors. There's nobody that's really been able to confirm that, except that Mark Hughes' article was significant because he was able to describe in detail. His sources are paddock engineers. And I think, and Matt, you can correct me if I'm wrong, one of the beauties of this current engine formula is that if you want to do any type of maintenance upgrade for cheaper parts or parts that, what's the term, that don't break as much or something
reliability
like that.
Reliability and cost savings.
Exactly. You have to share... Your proposed
safety
changes.
And cost savings. Yeah, you have to send
share
around
with everybody else, right? So the secretive engine technology is not quite so secret if you have to share your blueprints and everything, which is the rules with all the competing engine manufacturers. And so, the secret world, there is a little bit of knowledge that's seen throughout the paddock by folks who are intrigued by this arcane stuff, and it's pretty cool if you're into technology. What's happening there?
I'm very curious. Like, I did not have time to do as much research on this as I wanted to, but my basic understanding is that the difference between the stratified charge and the homogeneous charge is how economical you can be with your mixture. Is that correct? Do I have that right?
Well, so here's the thing. I don't know. I noticed with some engineer types that I was chasing around on bulletin boards that the common term for the common usage of stratified charge combustion ignition tends to be with a diesel application where they're squirting in a rich mixture of fuel into a very lean cylinder, and it causes the combustion to happen as it goes in. Whereas what we're seeing is this little micro cylinder
chamber,
and that's pre-igniting and then ignites the main charge in the main cylinder. And to my mind, and I'm no engineer, right, you know, but that would be that would be the definition of stratified charge combustion ignition, aka SCCI. So I don't know if I've answered your question, though.
No. But as compared to the homogeneous charge, which you thought perhaps was
The homogeneous was after. Charge. Yeah. Right. And so what Renault is bragging about is via Mark Hughes and that contact is his source is that they're going to have homogeneous charge combustion ignition. And that implies that it's a single chamber. It's the main chamber. It's the piston. And that it just gets up to top dead center. There's so much pressure. There's so much heat. And you have the spontaneous combustion a la diesel, as Spanner's correctly identified.
Yay.
And the impression is that that's probably not the case. And from the engineering types that I've seen, there's some real challenges there for a racing application with wide open throttle.
Tony, do you agree that the way forward is homogeneous exploding diesel truck? I may have lost track of what was going on.
Exploding things are always good. But while you've come to me, I'm going to jump in. A minute or so ago, Craig Ollison jumped in. He said, "So true, this is a complete failure of the 2014 power unit concept. The regs were designed to allow development of ERS rather than internal combustion. The internals are massively regulated. I'm surprised they're able to do this. Must be to do with the fuel rather than the cylinder." What do you think?
Well, I think that, not surprisingly, the FIA is once again, and they have accepted blame for the cost of these engines being too high. I don't care what someone like Mercedes spends developing an engine. What I do care about is the total cost to the user in the sport of that engine. If the FIA were to cap the engine cost at X, $10 million, $12 million, $15 million, then let the manufacturers decide how much they want to spend developing whatever it is, and you might get more rational decisions in terms of dollars and cents for horsepower and fuel economy. But back to your point, the difference between these two engines seems like to me is pretty significant, and that you can get more economy out of a stratified charge engine than you can out of a homogeneous charge engine. And in an engine formula that values economy, if Renault has really gone homogeneous charge, the only way that might be advantageous for them is if none of the other ICE engine manufacturers, internal combustion manufacturers, have actually pursued that. Am I understanding that correctly?
Well, so what I supposed on Twitter is maybe Renault did pursue homogeneous charge, and it turns out to be a wrong road to go down, that it would make a better racing engine to be stratified charge. And so maybe that motor that was blowing up, that was underpowered, that was horrible off of the corners and all that stuff last year, that I don't know, though. I mean, that's a very dark hole, and there's very little insight there. So I was making, candidly, a wild supposition.
We love wild suppositions here, Ken.
We live for wild
speculation. We live wild speculation. But we are running short of time, so I'd like to give the last word on engines to Tony Thunderbeast Barnard.
Last word to me? Oh, I'm honoured.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Well, I'd really be happy if I had something to offer. But
I don't know. I just thought that you'd made a very intelligent comment in the chat.
Oh, that. Well, I wasn't sure if I was 100% right or not, but I'm going to throw it in anyway. Craig jumped in. He says he's confused as he's supposed to make a petrol rather than a diesel. And I just said, well, I think the point is the compression of the diesel lowers the flash point so it combusts. The principle also applies to petrol, but it's not necessary as it ignites for the spark anyway.
Engineering.
But by compressing it and then hitting it with a spark, then you get a bit more power, a bit more bang for your buck.
Mm.
That's the way the layman, myself, I think that's a layman engineer who doesn't know what F1, that's how I'm reading it.
Now, I can see lots of waving hands, but I want to move on to something more fun, and I get my way.
Daddy, I want a pony, and I want it now.
Vivian, tell me about Hollywood, baby.
Yes, apparently this Tuesday there's a new movie coming out. The movie is called Senna versus Brundle, and it's from Mario Muth. And basically, it's a film about the British Formula 3 in 1983, where both of them were fighting for the championship. Apparently, they used some of the footage that they couldn't use in the Senna movie, in the original Senna movie.
Yeah.
So they spoke to their producers. They're using some of the scenes, and they're making this new movie, and it's going to be available in Vimeo online. I think it's $7.99. You can download it, buy it, download it, and watch it. And it's going to be released this Tuesday, just before the anniversary of Senna's tragic death in Imola 1994, which happened May 1st. So if you want to relive some of the action, not Formula 1, but yes, Formula 3, you can download the movie. I'm not getting any credit for it, but I just saw it online and I thought it was nice for us Formula 1 sports fanatics.
Is it a dramatic type movie or like a documentary?
Documentary. There's people talking. There's a lot of footage, pictures and a film about Martin and Senna, and it's very well. I saw the trailer, and it's really good. It's worth the $7.99.
Worth the $7.99. What is there? No, like, yeah. Rental option. Ooh,
yeah,
I don't know.
That's the only option they are offering on Vimeo, and you can watch it that day or maybe later.
Do you reckon that was Brundle as critical of everything in 1983 as he is now? Oh, these cars are rubbish. That Senna, he's overrated.
Well, he became a Formula One broadcaster, so he can say whatever he wants. Now he's not driving a car.
I guess not being a world champion, he became a broadcaster.
Exactly.
Oh, dear. Him and Johnny Herbert. Yeah. Speaking of Alonso, that's because it was Alonso that stood toe-to-toe with Johnny Herbert and faced all his might. Alonso is reported that he wants to drive something else. And it's not Formula E. So Alonso is reported as wanting to add Le Mans and the Indy 500 titles to his CV. So along with the Monaco win, that would give him the Triple Crown, which Graham Hill is the only driver ever to do, along with one Pablo Montoya's got two. He's got Monaco and Indy 500. And apparently he also still wants to do Le Mans. Is there time for Alonso to achieve these things, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you look at the IndyCar drivers, they seem to have a little longer lifespan, as it were, in the cockpit than the Formula One drivers do.
That's the open wheel one, isn't it, Indy?
That is the open wheel one, absolutely. And as for WEC, well, let's face it, Weber's racing WEC, so certainly Alonso could manage that if he had to.
That's savage. Even Hülkenberg won that.
I think the Formula One teams and or the FIA is trying to steer Formula One drivers away from doing that. And I don't really know why exactly, but you look at the Baku debacle, if you will, this year, where Hülkenberg's not allowed to defend his title at Le Mans. And it just seems like there are avoidable conflicts in the schedule that have popped up. And perhaps that's Bernie's influence behind the scenes, trying to keep the drivers from becoming more important than the sport. Or perhaps it's something else going on. I don't really know. But I'm not sure he'll be able to do it before he stops driving a Formula One car.
I love it when you do conspiracy theories and stuff. The Russians, they love the conspiracies. Do you think that was more of a French accent then?
Paranoia will destroy ya.
I might have dropped the ball on the accents then, but we are going to Russia, which is a very interesting track. It's a Tilka track, but it doesn't seem quite as a stop-start as the others. It's interesting, but is it good?
Yeah, it's a Tilke track, but remember that they built it around the Olympic Games structure, so basically they had to work with what they had.
Oh, right, so they just rammed it in around the Sochi Olympic thing. Now, it's actually quite hot in Sochi, isn't it? Because I had assumed from the Winter Olympics that it was a bit of a cold place to go racing.
You may be wrong. I thought it was going to be relatively cool there.
Oh, no. All right. Okay. Well, can anyone settle this? Can the chat room settle? Is Sochi hot? Because I thought that whole point, I thought I heard something where they had to artificially cool it quite a lot. But what about that turn three, Matt? That is an epic turn.
I do love the long turns. Those are a lot of fun to watch. They just destroy tires if you don't enter them correctly.
There seems to be a few different ways to go into that turn three as well.
Well, and we see this with the better racetracks, is they allow multiple lines through corners, which gives you a chance at pulling off an overtake and or a crash. Yeah, either one of which is entertaining.
I think it's crappy though with that turn one. There's no risk, so you can break as late as you want, and you're only really going to dribble through the runoff back on track.
Oh, you mean the Nico Rosberg Memorial Turn?
Yeah, exactly. Like, okay, so you might have to give up the place that you... Basically, it's a shot to nothing because you have to give up the place that you were going to fail to get anyway. So there's no point being conservative. You may as well slam it on as late as possible. And the worst thing that can happen is you have to give that gained place back.
Yeah, well, but this gets to the larger nature of safety versus racing. In general, they've added more and more runoff. And while ostensibly it makes it safer for the drivers, it also leaves them able to just flaunt at will and make choices that they would never have made were the consequence of going off track more severe to their car and or their race.
Yeah, but there's not even anything to drive around sort of in the style of Monza, is there? It's purely flat and open. Like, at least Monza, you have to sort of weave in and out some speed bumps if you get offline.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the thing behind it is that if you've gone that far off, you're already losing places anyway. You're not really going to, if you're on the outside of the turn, you're not really going to be making up places on anyone.
All right, Ken, the key thing about this track that I can remember is magic tires. Nico Rosberg's magic tires, they never ran out. And famously, he changed tires on lap two or lap one, or at the end of the first lap, and that was it. He was able to finish the rest of the race on his mediums.
Yeah. So that was a very interesting thing. It's a relatively new track. And so last year, Pirelli were wondering, well, will these tires last longer? Because now the asphalt is aged or whatnot. And it turned out it made seemingly no difference whatsoever that you could just go forever and ever and ever. But I'm assuming unless like the winter was particularly harsh and it busted up the track or something like that, that we're going to look at... once again, the tire's not really wearing out. Pirelli is not, they could have gone really aggressive if they wanted to and said, okay, the tires are going to be ultra soft and super soft and soft, but they were a little bit conservative, candidly. So it's super soft, softs, and mediums. And so what we can expect is probably 1 to 2 stops. And that theoretically, that I don't know, but I'm looking forward to seeing how long those tires go.
I really hope there's going to be something vaguely interesting because despite the potential of the track, it hasn't been an exciting race to watch, has it, in the last 2 years? So in more of hope than expectation, I think, of the weekend, it could very well be a procession with nothing to mix it up. Tony, how are you feeling about your contribution so far this week?
Not awesome. I knew I was wrong about
tell
that.
Tell me what
thing.
Happened. Do you want to clarify?
Well, it doesn't lower the flash point of the diesel. It increases the temperature, making it easier to ignite. That's what it was. And I'm quite embarrassed. And I really don't appreciate you bullying me into saying it, to be honest.
No one cares. Let's find out what you know about Russia. Of course, that would involve me having the right document up. There we go. All right, then. Quickfire, guys. Shout out if you know. This year, which team has the most set of soft tyres?
6.
Right. Okay.
Ferrari.
Matt goes Ferrari. Any advance on Ferrari?
Because they love the soft tyre.
It is Ferrari. 5 points to Matt there because of 5 sets. When was the first Russian Grand Prix? Shout it out.
2 years ago.
2014.
2014?
6 years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
Actually, it was back around the turn of the century because remember, Mercedes won it.
There we go. Thing. Well, unfortunately, that wasn't your first answer, Matt. You said 2 years ago. So Tony, with 6 years ago, was the most correct because it was 103 years ago. So Tony, you're closest. You get 97 points. Well done.
I think Matt should get those points.
Unfortunately, you're not in charge of the quiz. So, right, what is the... Last week,
I feel much better about sounding stupid earlier on. Thanks.
We had the longest.
Well done, Tony.
In China, we had the longest straight of the year at nearly 1,200 meters. What is the length of the longest straight in Sochi?
900.
800. 65.
1,000.
950.
The closest person then was Matt, because it's 650 meters.
Exactly what I said. Should have stuck with the sixes.
Damn it.
Even though...
I don't know what it sounded like, but that's exactly what I said.
Last question then. No, second to last question. Overall track length. Go.
Over 5 kilometers.
6 kilometers.
5.4.
6.1.
And I believe it's 5.8, so I believe the closest was Tony again. So that's another 74 points for that question. But for 150 points, who's better, Russia or America?
Russia.
America.
And how do you, what's the common abbreviation for the United States of America?
USA.
I'll give you a chance for that. Okay then, guys. So, Tony, do you have for us a...
comment of the week.
Yes, well, welcome to Comment of the Week, guys. This is me, Tony, or Thunder Beast. I'm coming at you from the toy room.
You may be overplaying this.
I just want to say Comment of the Week this week is from RealMattPT55. He said, yes, plus his forehead is shiny, and that's with reference to our horse Spanners Reddy's forehead. It's very shiny and very large.
Wow, the pressures of the media spotlight I've put myself
such
under.
Mean people.
Speaking of spotlight, yeah, there is a lot of glare off said forehead.
Wow. Okay, don't bother watching the live stream to find out if that's real. Next week I'll, what do you need, a little foundation? Is that what you do, Vivian? A little bit of foundation to get rid of the shine?
Yeah, a little bit of foundation and better lighting.
Better, but well, it's not really much I can do in the
even
shed.
Better,
go on, Matt.
Just don't send video. Do us all a favor.
Well, you know, being a thing, realizing that we're previewing the Russian race, I realized that we were a bit neglectful and not talking about the tires at all. Although you did mention them in the quiz.
Well, it was a bit of a reaction to how much we talked about tires last week.
Yeah, which is okay. But I saw a forecast in the comments for the race. It was only supposed to be 19 and sunny, I think. Was that correct?
Right, yeah. So 19, that's warmish.
Yeah, and yes, interestingly enough, with only the exception of Manor, all of the teams have brought exactly one set of mediums to this race.
That's, yeah. Well, that's amazing. So we could see like a 7-stop race if they're all running on softs.
Yeah, with the degradation being so low, probably not. But remember our guest Summers last week talking about how temperature-dependent the tires are. If that weather forecast changes, and the softs or the supers go out of their operating window, it could be a very entertaining ride for some of the teams, is what I would say.
Yeah, it's worth going.
They have no place to go if it gets hot or it gets cold.
It's worth going back and listening to the first half of our China review to listen to Summers talking about how the temperature affects the tires, and that's more so this season, do you think, than in previous seasons?
That seemed to be what he implied to me. You feel the same way, Ken?
Not necessarily. The tires have always had a slightly varying range of operation, and so what that would mean, to put it in real terms for our fans, is that if it turns out that there is a sudden heat wave or something like that, the soft tire would be the tire that suddenly may come in vogue. The super softs may not last as long as what everybody's guessing they will.
Okay, let's go round the table. Vivian, who's going to win the Russian Grand Prix? Don't say it.
No, I'm going to say Nico Rosberg. I think he's on a very nice streak. He will win this world championship, even though Bernie said that Lewis Hamilton was going to win. But I'm really, really looking forward to Vladimir Putin's entrance at the Russian Grand Prix.
Maybe that will be the real winner. Matt, who's your winner?
Oh, it's Lewis will win. I always pick Lewis to win because, historically speaking, the odds are on my side there. But I'm personally looking forward to whether or not Vladimir and Bernie dress like twins again, because I thought that was the best thing ever.
Ken, could you make a race prediction without referencing Vladimir Putin?
Sure. I'm going to... to be different, I'm going to... So Ferrari has a rumored engine upgrade that they're supposed to bring to Russia. So I'm going to choose one of the red boys. I guess I'll choose Vettel just to make Vivian a little upset.
Yeah, but will the engine upgrade keep them from crashing into each other?
Well, that's a great point. I think so, because, you know,
cruel, Matt.
I know. I'm sorry.
It was the tires. It was the tires. It wasn't the driver. We'll just say that. How's that, Vivian? Is that good?
Much better.
Well, I think the first phase was clearly Vettel's fault, and then Kimi recklessly came back on and smashed into Hamilton because he's not very good, Viv. I don't understand how someone is. You're a professor of English.
He didn't crash into Hamilton. Somebody else crashed.
Fine.
Into Hamilton.
He basically played billiards with a Sauber to take Hamilton out. Basically the same thing. Tony, who's your winner? Who's your winner for Russia, Tony?
I don't know. Will Stevens?
Last year, he stood a chance. This year, maybe someone who's actually competing in F1.
I think the chances are about the same this year.
Actually, he might be the winner because he doesn't have to come up with a sponsorship any longer.
No, it's great. Will Stevens, that's officially your guest. But guys, you can find Vivian Beauvais at Vivian Beauvais. Or Ken, catch up with him at Vortex Mortio. Always catch up with the fantastically bouffanted quiff of at MattPT55. Find Tony at a Dad's View and me at Spanners Ready. Anything else anyone particularly wants to plug?
Yeah.
Go on.
I changed the name of my Facebook page so it'd be super cool and get more people. It's now called Dad Hub. So check it out.
I don't understand the reference, if there's a reference at all to be made. All that's left to say is check out spannersready.com. I've done a lot of work on there. There's even some blogs to read. But until next time, wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. See you next time on Missed Apex.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.